Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity, and I have trusted in the Lord without wavering. Prove me, O Lord, and try me. Test my heart and mind. For your steadfast love is before my eyes, and I walk in faithfulness to you. I do not sit with the worthless, nor do I consort with hypocrites. I hate the company of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. I wash my hands in innocence and go around your altar, O Lord, singing aloud a song of thanksgiving and telling all your wondrous deeds. O Lord, I love the house in which you dwell and the place where your glory abides. Do not sweep me away with sinners, nor my life with the bloodthirsty, those in whose hands are evil devices, and whose right hands are full of bribes. But as for me, I walk in my integrity. Redeem me, and be gracious to me. My foot stands on level ground. In the great congregation, I will bless the Lord. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We find the Psalms in the center of the Bible, right in the middle of things. They reside in a wisdom section that instructs us in how to live, situated between the ponderings of Job and the one-liners of the book of Proverbs. They speak for the wise life, the righteous life, the holy life. A psalm is a script for the relation between humans like us and our Maker. So it is no surprise that they are often grounded in reality, not fantasy. They remind us that life is beautiful and life is also ugly. There are rewards to hard work and blessings in diligent effort, and sometimes hard work and good effort are blown up by evil. God invites us to keep living in faithfulness no matter what comes. God promises we will inevitably flourish, even if that doesn't seem obvious right now. Just last week in this pulpit, Brent Eelman reminded us in Psalm 2, there is noise and nonsense among the nations of the earth. But above them all, God laughs, for every ruler of this age is temporary. A few weeks before that, Jim Thiron stood in this pulpit with Psalm 17. He reminded us there are wicked enemies surrounding us like lions. They are ready to pounce and do us harm. Yet we are the apple of God's eye, defended by a stronger Savior. Now, Psalm 26 stands among these well-rooted trees. The poet of this psalm has led a consistent life. He has done all he can to fly straight and live right, so he calls upon the Lord to show some consistency in return. Vindicate me, Lord, he says. I have done everything right. I trust you. In response to your steadfast love, I walk in faithfulness toward you. So vindicate me, exonerate me, clear my name. And then he says something more. I stay away from the worthless, the hypocrite, the evildoer, and the wicked. Now that is well-seasoned advice. One of the ways we guard our loved ones, especially when they're smaller, is by warning them to avoid dangerous people. And then we throw a proverb of our own on top. Birds of a feather flock together, or you are known by the company you keep. When I was a teenager, Saturday night would come and my mother would ask, well, where are you going tonight? What are you doing? And most importantly, who's going with you? Well, there were a few of my associates that she did not regard very highly, and if I blurted out the wrong name, she said, now, I'm not sure that's a good idea. or my sister, almost my age, traveled in many of the same circles as me, she would discover I had designs on dating somebody who wasn't on her approved list. What? Why are you going out with her? Don't you know about her reputation? And of course, what I never said out loud was that the bad reputation was exactly why I was interested. Now, I'm joking, mostly, but I affirm their judgment was in line with the morality material of the Bible. You have to be careful with whom you associate. To summarize from one of the Proverbs, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. Or as the Apostle Paul would warn with a wagging finger, bad company ruins good morals. And we know this to be true. One of the parlor games these days, particularly in this part of the world, is to open the daily newspaper and ask which politician will be going to jail next. The public trust unravels when those in authority take more of their share or demand what they have not rightfully earned. Every single day, somewhere, we hear about some flagrant neglect of the law, a blurring of right and wrong, a justification to approve it, a power grab rooted in arrogance. And should a journalist report the truth, journalists will be accused by the guilty of manufacturing something called fake news. And then somehow out of somewhere, a big red rubber ball will be tossed to distract us to look somewhere else. Now the psalmist will have none of this. The psalmist stands firmly within a moral tradition. There is right and there is wrong. There is a difference between good and bad, pure and sleazy, noble and reprobate, virtuous and greedy. I have been careful with all of my associations, says the writer of Psalm 26. I do not hang out with the wrong people. I avoid the riffraff. Good advice. Character matters. And I guess it's no wonder that then there would be serious concerns issued about Jesus, of all people. Because according to the record, he persisted in spending time with the wrong people. It didn't look good. The religious leaders, the upright ones, wrinkled their brows and pursed their lips. Whenever Jesus would go into the home of a known sinner, he would sit at their tables and break bread with them. And for those who saw the world in dualistic terms, right, wrong, good, and bad, this was disturbing. Now, there was no question that Jesus was good. He had the authority to heal the sick, and he did it repeatedly. His wisdom opened human hearts to God. He spoke truth, and he served those in need. He was a good man, yet Jesus also spent time with those whom the righteous dismissed as unclean and the religious dismissed as evil. And they murmured among themselves, "You are known by the company you keep." In the other brief text we heard today, Jesus calls a tax collector named Matthew to follow him and join his merry band. And right after that, Jesus then hosts a dinner party in his own house that draws in the tax collectors and the sinners. Now, we've heard about the tax collectors before, despised because they collaborated with the Roman army that occupied the land. And we can only guess who the sinners were. Most likely, they were people who lived in the shadows, not easily traced, enveloped in shame. Their business was suspicious, their behavior was suspect, there was something shady about them. You know, we once had somebody like that who lived on my street. Never seen outdoors, window shades always drawn, always had plenty of money, but nobody knew the source. But the neighbors have their speculations. The tax collectors and the sinners, they are the ones who flock to Jesus. They gather around him like flies to honey. They are despised and excluded, Jews banned from entering their own Jewish temple. And here comes Jesus to them, available, accessible, friendly, inclusive, welcoming, and always willing to share a meal. Now, didn't he know Psalm 26? I hate the company of evildoers. I will not sit with the wicked. I wash my hands in innocence. Do you hear the tension here? I think we do. I think we understand it quite clearly. With the parade of interesting characters who go across our newspaper headlines, I took a recent professional interest in the account of one of them by the name of Roger Stone. Remember him? Political operative, dirty trickster, long trail of suspicious activities, and a full-size, larger-than-life tattoo of Richard Nixon's head on his back. Well, he was convicted in federal crime of 7 counts of witness tampering and lying to investigators, but now he says he found the Lord while he was in prison. I confess I swallowed pretty hard at that one. Who does he think he is? The Apostle Paul. Well, we'll wait and see if the convert makes amends and actually lives a converted life. And while we wait, that little vignette gives us a clearer view of Jesus as related to this psalm. As he defined his mission to the Pharisees and the other purebreds, I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And in his complete goodness, Jesus does just that. He calls the sinners. He welcomes them to his side. He embodies mercy, and that ultimately becomes his sacrifice. As we well remember, he pays dearly for loving the enemy. He practices the love of God for all people. He steps over that dotted line between righteous and sinner. And in no small part, this is what sends him to the cross, especially in the Gospel of Matthew. He suffers for doing the right thing, God's right thing. And that gives us one more window into Psalm 26. The psalm begins with a cry for vindication. It is a prayer for God to exonerate a faithful life. Whoever prays this psalm has found himself in a pack of trouble, not because they've done anything wrong, you understand, but precisely because they've been doing everything right. It's about a good man being attacked because he was a good man. About somebody who calls on God to reveal the truth about his life, because that will be his vindication. As Dietrich Bonhoeffer once counseled, whenever we come across a psalm that sounds difficult, try to hear it again as if Jesus is praying it. Because this was his prayer book, he knew the scriptures. Now, those who condemned him might have thought that the psalm applied to them. They took pride in their purity. They don't associate with the lowly, and yet in doing so, they expose themselves as hypocrites. And that kind of hypocrisy is still going on. And Pontius Pilate, who presided over the trial of Jesus, he washed his hands in innocence, just like the psalmist affirms, as if Pilate himself was not complicit in killing an innocent man. And that kind of bloodthirstiness continues, too, whenever injustice is met with force and violence. But still, quietly, at the center of it all, Christ hangs on the cross. He has done nothing wrong and everything right. His goodness is condemned by those who can only be described as evildoers. They took great pride in separating themselves from those described as the riffraff, and that has exposed them as something far worse. And even so, the irony of it all, the mystery of it all, is that the very deed of pushing Jesus onto the cross is the singular event that breaks down the wall between evil and holiness. The righteous and the powerful murder the Son of God, yet God does not retaliate or punish. God shows mercy. The same mercy his Son has offered again and again and again. Forgiveness is announced. A new beginning is offered. Self-righteousness is demolished, giving way only to the righteous love of God. And finally, that's what saves us all. So the word that shimmers in Psalm 26 is the word integrity. Integrity at the beginning, integrity at the end. The Hebrew dictionary says integrity is about completeness, that you are who you say you are, that you do what you profess to do, and you live in clarity, not confusion. The good news this day comes then not from the psalm, but after it. For indeed, Jesus has been exonerated. After the cross, his integrity has been affirmed. He is revealed in resurrection as the innocent one, as the Holy Redeemer who snatches us out of darkness and brings us into God's marvelous light. And his invitation to us is to join in praying the final words of Psalm 26. As for me, I walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be gracious to me. My foot stands on level ground. In the great congregation, I will praise the Lord.